Welcome back to Same Here Man, the podcast where we insist on including a conversation about childhood, even though we're all falling apart. If you try really hard, you could probably find us on the internet. I am Lucille Mills.
I'm Marie Renee Katz.
And we are finally introducing ourselves, even though we've been recording for I don't know how long.
Yeah. What are we talking about today, now that we've taken a little break that lasted several months?
We're here to catch up, first of all, and also to update our goals for the show and maybe talk about the future and how our lenses and perspectives have changed. So what's changed with you, Marie?
A lot has changed since the last time we talked. I got COVID again. That was fun times. Hopefully I sound better than the last episode we left you guys on. The biggest thing that's changed for me, though, is that I am expecting a baby. My husband and I are welcoming our first little one in May of next year, so 2023. So I'm pretty nervous, pretty excited, but mostly nervous.
I'm excited. You can be nervous and I'll be excited.
You can be excited for the both of us.
It's like Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
So that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about today, because kind of our motif of today's episode is going to be change is hard, because we've both gone through a lot of changes since the last episode we recorded.
For real.
I am very excited to become a parent, and this is something that we wanted, my husband and I, and so I don't want to make it out to be all negative, but I also just wanted to come on here and be honest about it, because one pattern I've noticed is that when I talk to women who have had children, they all go, oh yeah, my pregnancy was awful. And they tell me all these stories about how awful it was to be pregnant. And I'm like, why does nobody talk about this? I just kind of think it doesn't benefit anyone to be taboo about the ways that it's awful.
Yep.
And so I don't know. I just want to be honest about it. But I do have to say, we are very excited.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good thing ultimately. And so, yeah.
The last time we recorded was before a slew of health-related emergencies, for better, lack of a better term, in my household, which have been super fun. Like, my sister had a mental health crisis and was hospitalized. And whenever that kind of an emergency happens in a household, the parents kind of tend to ask themselves, like, was this my fault?
Yeah.
So that brings up a lot of baggage that no one wants to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
In June, my dad died super suddenly. And one of the changes I want to talk about isn't the exciting change of becoming a new parent, but of becoming a person navigating the world without a parent. It's weird and different. And
yeah,
the grieving process is something we could probably record a million episodes on. So I won't go too deep into that because it's different for everyone. But we suck at it as a culture. And that's the end of my story there. And then following all the stress that comes with someone leaving this planet and leaving behind a lot of shit, I ended up getting diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and being hospitalized. And that has been really hard. And you might hear a slur in my voice or something of that nature. And depending on how well I edit this, you'll know.
And kind of going back to what you were saying about our society sucking at grieving, I feel like people are aware of, and maybe not as much as they should be, but people are aware of the emotional impacts of losing someone. But I feel like watching you go through this with your family and your dad passing away has made me really realize, like, the logistical impacts that it has on your life, having to go through all of his stuff and driving back and forth since your family lives in another state. There's so many things like that. I hadn't even considered those things. It's just a whole other layer of difficulty that I feel like our society doesn't quite recognize as much as it should.
Yeah. One of the few sections of our society that's really good at death and dying is if you look at Jewish people, one of the things that is also like going to be changing my lens on our podcast topics in general, and also my life and everything, is I've been slowly converting to Judaism, and doing a lot of education along the way, because that's part of the course. Having that comparison between how one culture deals with death and dying and how one culture doesn't deal with death and dying has made it really profound, like how different it is.
Yeah. So you were raised Christian. Can you like speak to the difference between the way that a Christian family would handle death and dying versus the Jewish perspective on that?
Totally. The biggest difference I noticed was right away I had to kind of out myself as a Jewish convert, because the conversations around death and dying were just so deeply linked to the asinine idea of knowing where somebody is afterwards. Like, well, he's in a better place, or he's walking with Jesus, or I was given very, very Christianized words of comfort. Part of me knows that some of those come from a good place.
Yeah, for sure.
But another part of me knows you don't know shit. Like, none of us know that. It's not comforting when I don't know where someone is and someone is purporting to know that. And so I had to kind of toe that line between someone's being empathetic or someone is offering what they find comforting to me and being nice about that because they are also sad that this person's no longer here, while also asserting like, this is my dad you're talking about.
Right.
While I know that brought him a lot of comfort while he was here, it doesn't comfort me now. So it's that question of like, how much do I matter in this equation? You know,
it should be more, because you're the, not to be morbid about it, but you're the one who's still here.
Thanks. I also have a microphone in front of me, so I feel very entitled to do that. The other difference, not specifically in Christian culture, but in American culture, there's the idea that grieving is one and done, and like you never come back to it, and you just return to work. And some of that has to do probably with the notion of capitalism. We could probably dig into that, but I'm sure it's already been done like 500 times. The idea that like I can't go out and like buy groceries and be grieving, so you got to finish up. You know, you can't tell who's grieving by looking at them. Like, maybe they're wearing black. No one wears a sign, you know? Everybody could be grieving. You wouldn't know.
A friend of mine talks about her kind of experience after her dad died. And she always talks about, like, the first time she went to a grocery store after it happened and just looking around and being like, nobody here knows what I'm going through. They don't know that overnight my life changed completely. And I don't know who in this store that I'm looking at is going through something similar, or, like, what is going on in their lives.
We're not used to seeing a lot of death in general.
Yeah.
Because it's all been outsourced to, you know, funeral homes that just stamp a paper and move on their merry way. It's hard to make that more personal.
Yeah, there's a lot of taboo around death.
So one of the big themes that isn't just about death is the opposite, is becoming a parent and bringing forth life into this world. What's like the biggest thing that you can say changes in your brain with how you see yourself?
I thought that I would be one of those people who like immediately has motherly instincts towards my baby, you know, upon finding out that I'm pregnant. And I've struggled a lot with this, but I don't quite feel those feelings as much as I thought I would, or as much as I hoped I would. It's created a lot of fear in me. What if some of the things I thought would come easy to me are actually a huge struggle? I thought I was prepared, and I have no idea what's going to happen here.
The sense of certainty and also a sense of being maternal is a weird thing to navigate.
Yeah. I think a lot of my problems with this too has just been, you know, because of all the hormones and everything like that, I've just been going through a lot of depression, and it's really hard to separate those feelings from the cause of those feelings, which is there's a child inside of me.
Yeah. And separating that from like the personality that child might develop.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, amazing. There have been times where I've just been angry at this child who isn't even born yet. I need to learn how to separate my own personal feelings of frustration and depression and anger from the child. I don't want to be one of those people who blames my kid for all of my unhappiness in life. It's teaching me that lesson before the kid's actually going to have any memory of.
You get like a practice run.
Yeah, I'm getting a practice run. I find myself already assigning personality traits to the kid that are negative because I am so not having a good time with being pregnant. Mm. I don't know, blaming my kid for my misfortunes. And that is something that my parents, specifically my dad, did to me a lot as a child, and that really fucked me up. And it's something that, wow, I want to be super aware of, that I don't mess my kid up in the same way. And so that's kind of why I'm being so candid about all of this, is because I think the more that I talk about it and the more that I can be aware of it, the better prepared I can be to not do these things.
The idea of separating "I am feeling frustrated" from "you are frustrating" mm-hmm. me is something we suck at, yeah, doing, and actually is a great way to bring a little teaser, because in the future I want to do some deep dive research, whatever you call it, on gentle parenting.
Mm, yeah,
because that has become so popular. Even though it's become popular, the blowback on it is super interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder exactly how your perspective on the matter is going to change in regards to our podcast material, since we'll have one parent and one not yet parent or non-parent.
That's true. Yeah.
It's going to be super interesting.
I would like to hear more about your experience with getting diagnosed with MS and how that's been affecting you.
Sure. I haven't seen you since you got pregnant. You haven't seen me since I got diagnosed. So this is, yeah, like not just an update for our audience, but also a "hi, I'm alive" kind of update. Getting diagnosed is really hard to view in a vacuum because it happened so close after the death of my dad. For a timeline, like end of June, my dad passed away, and it was super sudden. Like, my poor mom found him alone, and my mom is deaf, and I had just talked with my father a few days before about, like, if there's an emergency, how is mom gonna call if she can't, yeah, hear, you know? And I found in one of his diaries he recorded right after our phone call, he wrote down, like, if there's an emergency, Jack can't call. And Jack is the family dog. Like, woof, woof, can't call. And and mom can't call. Like, so what do? I'm a goner. Mm. And
wow,
that sucks to find, you know, to, yeah, be like, oh, I brought this up. It makes me feel like, oh, it's my fault. But I didn't kill anybody. So
no. And
disclaimer.
If anything, it shows that you were right to have brought it up, and your timing couldn't really have been any more impeccable.
Yeah, it sucks to know how timely it was.
Yeah.
After that, and from what little I have brought up of my mom on the podcast in earlier episodes, she has never super had the opportunity to, like, live on her own terms or be her own person even.
Yeah.
And a lot of that led to a situation where I was taking care of a lot of things that needed to be taken care of, and I was driving back and forth a lot, and all of the stress after my dad's memorial finally happened, all of those things led to I woke up one day and couldn't write very well and couldn't type very easily, and thought, maybe I'm just really tired, I'll go to bed early. And it didn't go away. And I ended up going to a hospital and diagnosed with stroke symptoms from two different places, you know, and eventually was in, wow, an ER all day. And it's awful sitting in an ER all day. And it's awful being in a hospital. No one's ever, yeah, left a hospital and said, like, I would do that again. You know, like, no one has ever done that.
Yeah.
Everyone is always like, worst experience of my life. It just sucks because it was, you know, it was the world crashing down. And, yeah, the world crashes down around people all the time. And there's nothing new or special or unique about that. But there's something special and unique about the world crashing down and not having a parent to call about it. So I can't really, I can't think of those two things as separate really anymore.
Right.
Because the stress of one kind of led to the stress of the other. And my relationship with my mom is not one where I can call and ask for her advice or her expertise.
I mean, even just from a logistical standpoint.
Yeah, exactly. I can't call her.
Yeah.
You're right on that point. Not just because I can't call her physically, but because she's just not as well-versed and not as close to me as my dad used to be.
I hadn't even thought of that aspect of it, but it totally makes sense because when I recently went through a flare-up of my Crohn's disease, I remember feeling like this is the first really bad flare that I've had where I've been like a grown adult and I've had to advocate for myself and I didn't have my parents taking care of all my health care. And both my parents are alive and it was still really difficult to navigate that system without them. So I can't even imagine, you know, the feeling that you were going through of not being able to have that parental support. That sounds awful.
Yeah, it is awful. I'm not going to sugarcoat that.
Yeah,
it's pretty terrible. It's been put a really good way to me that usually for most of your young adult life, even have an adult that you can call who knows more than you do.
Yeah.
And there's something about losing the person that you used to always call, whether that be a parental figure or an older sibling or a parent or whatever. And when that person leaves, it's a really big shift.
And yeah, I can imagine.
I've lost that person and have become that person for my mom.
Wow.
That is an incredibly hard shift to make with one step, and it's unbearable with two.
Wow,
and
yeah.
Going from one to the other.
Fuck, that sounds like, I don't even know what to say.
It's not just that I've lost the person I would call to be like, hi, how do I change the tire again? Not that I would call and ask that because he set me up well. But I've also become the person that is being asked, like, how do I change a tire?
Right.
And how do I, can you do this phone call for me? Because she can't. Or how do I choose an insurance? Or bugging my husband even when I'm like, hi, I can't do this right now with questions. And teaching my mother, one, just how to Google something, but also to be independent and make these judgment calls on her own it's like raising a teenager almost and letting them go and just, you have to figure it out, you know? It's not because you don't have empathy, it's because you do. And that distinction is so hard, especially when that's supposed to be your parent.
I guess I always pictured that shift of being the one who's taken care of to the person who's taking the care. I always pictured that shift happening when you choose to become a parent. Mm. And what's so frustrating about your situation is that you didn't get to choose this and you didn't get to have a say on the timing. It just happened to you.
That's true. And the other negative is that you don't get the joy of holding a baby. There isn't the joy of like watching a toddler run around and explore the world for the first time. It's just negative. And it's just watching the person who birthed you already and watched you take your first steps and went through all those years of making you peanut butter and jelly that suddenly not know how to navigate the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard. And only hard. It's not both hard and there's joy. Like, I don't get to tuck in a cute thing at night, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Ugh. I hadn't actually said it all out loud in this way before recording this. But it's almost like our transitions are similar in a weird way without universalizing or or making your point my point, even though it's definitely not, you know, our two things are very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how many parallels there are, and it's amazing how comparable the two can be, even though there's, I can't think of more opposite scenarios.
You know? I know.
Birth and death.
But I think where they tie in is this sense of losing childhood, the sweetness of childhood, which we've talked about previously, and the feeling of nostalgia and longing for the simplicity of childhood. I think that's something that we're both experiencing right now.
Yes.
For very, very different reasons, but I think that's kind of where our Venn diagrams overlap.
The one thing that I neglected to share is, like, what is multiple sclerosis? For listeners who do not know, multiple sclerosis comes from the term sclera, which means scarring. And it's an autoimmune disease in which your immune system or your white blood cells, or however you want to call it, attack something of your own.
Yikes.
One of the scariest parts of multiple sclerosis, I can't even say it, of MS, is not knowing, is the uncertainty.
Yeah.
Not knowing how long a flare-up will last, and the inflammation will attack whatever lesions are happening in either my brain or my spinal cord or my whatever. Or like knowing if it'll come back or when it'll come back or how badly it'll come back, because there aren't any diagnostic tests for the future.
Yeah, that makes sense. Can you talk about like how it affects you, like, as far as like, what are your symptoms? What do you experience on a day-to-day basis when you're having a flare?
Oh, totally. Like I said, the first couple days, like, I just noticed I couldn't write or type very normally. Mm-hmm. Since then, my symptoms have changed. I still am not coordinated, and I walk with a limp, and I can't write or do any of the crafts I like to do, which is super annoying.
Yeah, that's such a bummer.
The symptoms vary widely. Like, I could have absolutely none of the same symptoms someone else with MS has, which is why I kind of sigh whenever people are like, I know blah, blah, blah with MS, or my cousin has MS. Like, that means nothing to me because all of our symptoms are different. It means something to me, but it means nothing to me.
Right.
The reason it varies a lot is because it can attack different parts of the brain, and your brain is in charge of everything, so the symptoms can vary widely.
Yeah, that checks out.
For me, the symptoms change to, like, now my whole right side is numb, and it's scary because sign language is how I communicate with mom, and I can only communicate kind of, and my handwriting is, you know, I don't know, kindergarten me would have passed me by a mile.
Wow.
Listeners of the show will know that I already kind of have a lens of disability being raised by two disabled parents.
Yeah.
But it's different when it's myself and it's something I have no control over. And, you know, your health is not promised to you, and you can wake up one day and not be okay. So that makes talking about childhood a little different as well.
Yeah. And another thing that you and I have kind of bonded over, I would say, with both having autoimmune diseases, is how invisible it can be to an outside person. I mean, I feel like yours is slightly more visible because somebody can observe the symptoms you're going through. But I think we can both relate to the feeling of it just gets lonely because
feels like
unless you've
been
through it yourself, it's really hard to conceptualize what someone else is going through.
Yeah.
And even though I have an autoimmune disease, even just listening to you talk about MS, it's really hard for me to understand just how painful it is. I mean, obviously, I take your word for it, but disability is one of those things where unless you've been through that specific thing, it can be really difficult to conceptualize and to sympathize. And so,
it can be really hard to explain to another adult what you're going through, and even harder to a developing brain of a young child what you're going through without just I don't know, reducing somebody to the wheelchair, you know? It's important to teach children the nicest way to deal with disabled people, and also to teach them you're healthy for now, you know? It's difficult to toe the line of not being scared.
Yeah, that's true. You're not guaranteed your health forever.
Yeah, it's very interesting that the differences between like how we raise disabled children versus how we raise healthy children and all of the in-betweens.
Yeah.
I do want to say that will color my lens going forward. One of my biggest like pet peeves is I wished I had better examples as a child of people who were disabled, because all the examples that I had like sucked. Like I would never want to sit down for coffee with them.
Oh, just like they were crappy people?
Yeah. Like the one person who walks like I walk growing up, I would never want to see her again. Like I would duck into a different aisle. If I could duck, you know, if I ever left the house. That is one thing that I regret and had no say in as a kid.
Right.
And I wish that I would have had someone cooler to look up to, you know? So yeah. I have to be my own cool person, I guess, with whatever disability I am dealing with that day.
I look forward to my children being around you and learning how cool their Uncle Lou.
You can call me Uncle. That's okay.
Uncle. Aunt Lou.
I don't know what the gender neutral is for uncle or aunt.
Wait, yeah, that's such a good question.
Like parent is gender neutral and sibling is gender neutral, but
like grandparent.
Good. Yeah, not for uncle.
Maybe just Funkle.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'll be that. So sorry, dear audience, dear listener, that it's taken us almost a year to come back and make some episodes and catch up. But we do have two very new lenses going forward. And one of them is going to be being disabled and how you navigate the world having a body that's different. And one of those lenses is going to be the lens of parenthood. And I'm so freaking excited to be the Funkle to that little bean.
Me too.
I don't care where I live. I don't care what's happening. I'm going to hop on a plane.
Oh. All
right. I would say that I'm knitting cute little things for a little bean, but I can't do anything, so I'm not.
You can just teach me how to crochet.
I can't do that because I don't know how to crochet.
Oh, okay.
This has been same here, man. And we really miss making regular episodes. Mm-hmm. If you want to tell us things, you can send us an email at samehearmanpod@gmail.com. Or you can find us on the internet at samehearman.com. If you try hard enough, you can probably Google us.
Are you still on Twitter, Lou?
I don't know. Maybe.
Go take a nap, Funkle Lou.
And we'll see you next time, I guess. Until then, I will be taking a very long nap. If you're still here, thanks.